Hello, everyone, and welcome back to an all-new episode of Insurance Uncovered. Produced by the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies, this podcast, we hope, is your source for insurance news and perspective from thought leaders in the property casualty insurance industry. I'm your host, Kathy Imus, and today we're uncovering reinsurance solutions. The expert panel addresses the challenges presented by the hardening reinsurance market and offers strategies to help with capacity. But first, in Washington, new legislation introduced in the U.S. House of Representatives seeks to require investment disclosures from certain insurers. In the Polluter Portfolio Disclosure Act, Democratic Representatives Adam Schiff and Rashida Tlaib accuse the insurance industry of profiting off climate change, despite the fact that insurers pay out billions in claims annually related to natural disasters. The bill would require insurance companies with more than $100 million in annual premiums to disclose investments and underwriting related to oil and gas production. But NAMIC Senior Vice President of Federal Affairs Jimmy Grandy says these disclosures are already required at the state level, and the duplicative measure would only increase costs for consumers.
State regulators have been examining the impact of climate change on insurers and the insurance marketplace for years, and disclosure has long been a part of that. Federal calls for insurers to publicly disclose investments is a red herring designed to score political points and does nothing to help consumers. There is no industry more affected by climate change in America or more sympathetic to the victims of increasing natural disasters than the insurance industry. America's insurers pay billions of dollars every year to help their policyholders recover from extreme weather, and they will be there for their policyholders when the next disaster strikes.
NAMIC is well aware that addressing the issues presented by a changing climate is a complex undertaking. The association urges lawmakers to recognize that progress will require buy-in and flexibility from market participants, regulators, and policymakers to further protect policyholders and build a more resilient environment. At the same time, NAMIC is working to ensure that policymakers also understand that the relentless rise in severe weather events is one of many factors that have significantly affected insurers' bottom lines. In March, insurance rating company AM Best reported that U.S. insurers recorded a $26.5 billion net underwriting loss in 2022. That's a slide of $21.5 billion from the prior year's underwriting loss, driven largely by the impacts of Hurricane Ian. Such losses are likely to continue, given that there already have been 12 confirmed weather or climate disaster events in 2023, with losses exceeding $1 billion each. And we haven't even hit the peak of hurricane season yet. Speaking of hurricane season, researchers from Colorado State University have updated their forecast for the 2023 Atlantic hurricane season. In July, CSU researchers increased their forecast for hurricane activity, now calling for 18 named storms, including 9 hurricanes and 4 major hurricanes of at least Category 3 or higher. And they're also now predicting an above-average number of tropical storms. The relentless barrage of natural disasters is one of several factors contributing to the hardening reinsurance market, a topic that, not surprisingly, has prompted a great deal of interest and concern among NAMIC members and others. So on today's Unscripted, we're doing something a little bit different. Instead of just a single interview, we're replaying a presentation from NAMIC's management conference this past June, where our CEO, Neil Aldridge, moderated a panel discussion about the current reinsurance market with representatives from Aon, Holborn, Jen Ree, and Guy Carpenter. Take a listen.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the firing squad. We wanted to have a panel, obviously, to discuss the reinsurance situation that's going on, affecting all of our businesses. We're not going to rehash what's happened. I also wanted to tell you the reason why I'm not sitting here is because if any of you decide to throw things at them, I was afraid you might hit me. So I'm over here on the side. But anyway, so why don't we start with introductions. Berto, let's start with you.
So, Berto Sciola, I work for Holborn Corporation out of New York City.
Scott Rubenstein with Guy Carpenter out of Philadelphia. Pat Abbey with Aon based in Minneapolis.
And Ridge Muley with General Reinsurance in Stamford, Connecticut.
Well, thanks again, guys, for all being with us today. And we're going to cover a waterfront in a short amount of time. We all know the story, as I mentioned, of the January 1 renewal. We're not going to go through what happened. We're going to focus more on what's coming. So what's changed? What's different? What do we see in the marketplace today? What can insurers expect? So why don't we start at the end? Berto, why don't you give us some of your thoughts on where the market is right now?
Yeah, so the market is very different today than it was at January 1. I would say that maybe two words that kind of capture what it was at January 1 and what it is today. January 1, we're not going to go there, but people operated out of fear, reinsurers particularly, in terms of trying to understand what their aggregate's going to be, what their risk appetites are going to be. Any number of reinsurers decided to cease writing property cat, which is kind of what I'm talking about. Things have normalized in the second quarter through 7/1s. And what do I mean by that? Pricing, capacity, and terms and conditions. So from a pricing standpoint, things have moderated year over year. Many of the 7/1s of last year actually got the first bite of the rate change. So it was more calm at 7/1 just now. And I would say from a capacity standpoint, I'm sure my colleagues here will talk about it as well, but there was capacity in the market. So as we like to say, it was price solvable. People could get their programs done at 7/1. And then in terms of conditions, I'm sure we can talk about that too, but there seem to be more mature conversations going on in the second quarter than was going on at year end last year for January 1.
Great. Scott, what do you think?
Yeah, I think without, as you suggested, rehashing what took place at 1/1, one of the driving factors at 1/1 was this potential gap between the supply of reinsurance capacity and the demand, which really never existed. So there is plenty of capacity available. In fact, while not as much has come in, given where rates are, you know, look at Everest a couple weeks ago raised $1.5 billion. And some of your peers are out buying cat bonds, and I'm sure you're reading in the press that there's, you know, they're getting priced lower, and there's plenty of capacity to meet the needs of insurers. So that has definitely brought stability to the market, and that's probably what we can expect for the foreseeable future. I'm sure we'll get into maybe what's going to happen at next 1/1, so I'll save those comments for then.
Sure. What do you see, Pat?
Yeah, I mean, just a small add, echo the comments that Berto and Scott shared. One of the things that we saw going back 14 or 15 months ago, primarily driven by inflation, was carriers going out and looking to secure additional limit. We're not going to hash January, but just to comment that we are seeing carriers going out and purchasing additional limit again here to start the year for 2023. A lot of that is driven by inflation is still positive, right? So while inflation's tempering and the media is talking about inflation tempering, it's still positive on top of some pretty large numbers. And so that's happening. But as Scott articulated really well, supply and demand are pretty balanced right now, which is creating that, you know, stable feeling in the market that we weren't feeling in November and December.
Great. So we've heard from the broker side, Ridge. What do you think?
One of these kids is not like the other, right? I think what I would like to talk about a little bit is just the difference in the conversation, right? So Berto alluded to it. The 7/1 was relatively, or it's becoming more orderly. I think the reality is, I think there's an expectation for a little bit higher dialogue about the decisions that we're making as reinsurance markets and the feedback that we want to get to. It's amazing how deep we're getting with some of our clients, and that's, I think, a benefit to us being a direct, as we can have that honest conversation, especially when we're asking for rate.
So let's talk a minute about capacity. We heard January 1, that was the biggest issue, right? Lack of capacity, demand being what it was. Now we hear maybe there is more capacity. Relatively speaking, where are we? Is it back to where it was? Is it half of what it was? Is it anywhere close to where it was or needs to be? Berto, you seem to have something there.
Yeah, no, so is it back to where it was? No. I mean, you know, Scott was just talking about Everest coming in with $1.5 billion. I think ILS capacity was about $8 billion, I think, depending on who you believe, at so far this year. So that's under $10 billion of capacity. We would posit that you need $20 or $30 billion of capacity to come in and kind of reach normalization, if you want to call that, supply and demand. But I think that we also think that there's latent demand, that people couldn't buy as much as they wanted to last year due to budgets or due to availability. And so I think that if people can free up some more money to buy some more limit, I think if limit's available, that will happen. So I think that it's all about being distinctive and having your story be singled out in the marketplace to get that capacity.
Sure, Ridge, on what are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would definitely echo that. I think the challenge now is the numbers are changing, right? So the market clearing price is different than it was before. So now it's a decision that an organization has to look at and say, now if my rate online is going up, what's it worth to me? And then it's the situation, it used to be earnings protection, but now it's balance sheet protection, or maybe that's the situation. Or valuations have gone up and you've done your modeling, you understand what your exposures are, what you think your exposures are, how much more should you buy, and at what point, you know, maybe we'll take a little bit more risk.
Sure. Pat, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's waiting to see new capital come into the market in a way that drives new company formation. We haven't seen that. But we are seeing lots of quieter capital raises that are impacting the industry. And you can even look, you know, you gave the example of Everest. You could look at Renaissance Re's recently announced purchase of the Validus book of business from AIG. You know, Ren is an industry leader in the business and leaning into that risk. So does that mean that there's tons of capital that's going to come in tomorrow or next month? Maybe not. But I think it's a sign of where risk is priced today. Informed capital is leaning into that risk more than they did in, let's say, November.
Great. Scott, do you see anything new? I mean, I think we have consensus that there is some new. Is there any new, like, creative ways that the capital is flowing in?
Yeah, right now, as we said, it's mostly flowing in on the ILS side, and I think the reason for that is those contracts are more specific to what's going to be covered, right? So you have a cap on, it's going to cover Northeast Hurricane. Nothing else is included, whereas traditional reinsurance is all perils. And I think we have reinsurers kind of looking at their historical experience over the last 5 or 10 years, and they're pricing for, in the Northeast, say, hurricane, and then they're getting hit with tornado hail, they're getting hit with winter storm, you know, the Texas winter storm. So they're trying to, you know, box out some of these perils that they're not necessarily pricing for. But, you know, going back to the conversation that we're having, I do think we're at an equilibrium. I think that there is plenty of capacity to meet the demand that's out there. If you think about the slide that Dr. Hartwig had up, the rate online index, if you look at the market cycles back in the 90s and the early 2000s, they were much longer, right? After an event, market went up and it took time to come back down. Capital would flow in. But over the last 10 to 15 years, those cycles are much shorter. You know, 5-6 years ago, we had 120 to 140% of excess capacity. We're not there, but there's enough to meet the demand. I think it was, Ridge, maybe you said, just the market clearing price has moved up. I think 1-1, this past 1-1, was a bit of an overreaction because of some of that, you know, concern about capacity being available, but that seems to have quickly resolved itself here at 4-1 and into the summer renewals.
Good. So the message is, you know, reinsurance is getting cheaper, more available. It's all going to be easy. You know, that's good. So yeah, go ahead, Bruno.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So, you know, Dr. Bob is fantastic. You know, so he's still here. He's fantastic. I think it was slide 17 that he showed, and it showed
that was 147 slides.
Yeah. I wrote it down a couple times, but it basically showed what the insured cat losses were over a period of time, and I think it was 2006 to 2016, it was relatively low when you look at those slides. But what it doesn't say is how much of that was reinsured. And the answer is not much, not compared to the last few years. So I would say that the reinsurer's cost of funding CAT for their clients the last few years is far more dramatic than it was going back from 2006 to 2016. Everybody did pretty well during that period of time. Both the ceding companies and the reinsurers. It was a quiet cat period, if you want to think about it from that standpoint, between hurricanes and also in the Midwest and the upper Midwest. That obviously has changed in recent years. And the reinsurers paid a disproportionate amount of that in recent years as well. So they're trying to recapture some of that. And that's the new price levels, I think, that are being set.
Yeah, that's the stuff I hear about the most, which is what happened to the long-term view, right?
Yeah.
But seriously, that's certainly a consideration.
Neil, so, can I add something to that?
Go ahead.
It's interesting you point out that slide about the cat losses, and I'm sure you've all seen numerous versions of that. You know, I think what's frustrating, particularly to NAMIC members, is a lot of those losses are losses that aren't necessarily impacting your portfolio. And I think at January 1, there was some disappointment in that the differentiation for particularly mutual companies that aren't necessarily exposed to those losses were paying these dramatic increases. I don't think anyone in this room, you know, would disagree that we're in a market. It is a market, right? And maybe the product is becoming more commoditized than it was. But there still should be some differentiation. And, there, you know, if cost of capital is up for reinsurers, and of course, cost of purchasing reinsurance is going to go up. And if there's loss activity, that too is going to drive it up. But I just think the lack of differentiation that didn't take place at 1-1 is starting to show up again. I do think while some relationships may have been damaged, I don't think many were damaged beyond repair. I do think at 1-1, when there was this concern that there wouldn't be enough capacity, that reinsurers, they weren't looking to write new business, but they were absolutely looking to trade with those that they've traded with over time. And I hope that, you know, again, I'm sure we'll talk about what to expect going forward, but maybe we get back to more of a normalized trading table for 1-1.
Great. So, Pat, let's start there. We have this new situation, maybe normalizing a little bit. You get client questions, concerns, trying to prepare for the renewals. What's the most common questions you hear? What sort of advice are you giving as we prepare going forward?
Yeah, so I think what's going to be really interesting between now and January 1 is you've got a spectrum of actions that the companies in this room and the companies outside of this room are taking, right? So they range from more aggressive rate making to very aggressive de-risking. And like Dr. Hartwig spoke earlier a little bit about a couple of the large national carriers no longer writing new business in a couple of peak, you know, territories. Mm-hmm. So I think what's going to happen now is that reinsurers are going to be very interested in what it is that your organizations are doing to navigate the environment that we're in, so this differentiation idea. And the differentiation topics are going to be a little bit different than what are you doing with insurance to value. Like, that was the thing that we talked about last year. It's still important, and we're going to continue to talk about it. But reinsurers are really going to want to understand what it is that you're doing to manage the volatility within your portfolio. If you look at, like, as an example, SCS loss trends, severe convective storm loss trends, and at a high level, it feels like you just can't ever get ahead of it. But the reality of it is if you pull apart what's happening with SCS loss trend, a large portion of that loss trend has to do with inflation, and it has to do with effectively what I'll call, like, urbanization, so concentration of exposure. None of us can change those two things, but we can change those things for our portfolios through some of this re-underwriting, rate-making, territorial segmentation, all that. So we're making sure that our clients are prepared heavily to be able to talk about the unique things that they're doing that I think are going to be not the same for everybody.
Ridge, what about you?
Yeah, and I would just build on that. I mean, it's really getting under the hood. It's better understanding what an organization is doing because they've got decisions, they've got challenges in terms of what they can do with the capital they have. So what are the actions they're taking to make sure that happens? I think preparing your story is going to be a vital part of the next thing. Like, what is your story? What do you want to go out and tell somebody as you kind of think about your portfolio and how it's changed over a duration of time? The other thing we're getting a little bit more is, what's up with casualty? You know what I mean? That's definitely a question that's coming up. You know, you're seeing trends go up, and that's where we tend to get in maybe the most interesting conversations with our clients is, what do you look at? How do you look at trend, and how do we look at trend? So thinking about that and having that ready and maybe bringing other members of your team to the conversation, the table, to get that perspective, I think could be a helpful thing as you think about talking to a market.
What about you, Scott? What are you hearing most commonly?
What's my rate change going to be? I think it's just, you know, looking at restructuring the program. I think we have a lot of clients who have come to realize that they've had the same retention for 5, 10 years, 15 years, yet surplus has gone up, so they're getting more comfortable taking that retention up. You know, if you're paying 40% rate online for that first layer, after reinstatement, you're collecting 20 cents on the dollar. Yes, I understand we want to try and manage volatility, but I think somebody mentioned earlier, it's more about balance sheet protection. You know, the dollar trading that you could do by saving that the premium by taking your retention up a million might buy you quite a bit more on top of the program for these potential severity type exposures. So it's a lot about how do we get creative with the way we're structuring our program. Reinsurers, it's no longer that, let's just stack, you know, blocks of reinsurance on top of each other. Let's make sure that we're customizing that solution to fit your portfolio, your loss experience, and most importantly, your risk appetite.
Berto, what about you? What are you hearing the most?
Yeah, no, I I think one of the questions you asked us in terms of preparing for this is flip it, not from our perspective, but from, you know, insurance company CEO's perspective. So we've been talking about capacity and all those things. But I think, Scott, your point is a good one. Retentions of where they have risen to are likely not to be coming down. I think that they're trying to bend the frequency curve and the severity curve from that standpoint. I think it was, you know, it was, again, not to talk too much about last renewal, but I mean, the way we think about it is our buyers, our clients, are sophisticated buyers of reinsurance. And they can take bad news, but they can't take negative news, negative surprises, I should say. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of negative surprises there. So, and one of the negative surprises was, to where Scott was going, increased retentions. You thought you'd be able to take some money and fund higher up. But, you know, that it was that money was to pay higher rate on lines for the vertical cover above. So there's some resetting that needs to occur.
Yeah. And I think one other thing I would add, just as you guys are talking, things pop into your head, right? I know there's a lot of organizations in this room that are thinking about what's next for them as an organization. Are there companies they want to start to think about affiliating with or acquiring? Having that story really well versed, as best you can share it, I think is really helpful in getting the partners on board early on to help you think about taking on that additional risk in a different region. It could be a great opportunity for you from one perspective, but it could be a challenge from another. So looking to your advisors to help you think through that, I think, is a good and part important.
Yeah. So that's one of the frustrations I hear the most from members is we're paying a lot more for less, right? Mm-hmm. Higher retention, higher rates, not the same kind of dynamic as we're typically seeing here. So that gets me kind of to the next question, which is, you know, as you look at sort of our membership, the people in the audience that you all know so well, mutual companies, you know, we all talk about one of their inherent strengths is their long-term view of risk. I think a lot of them would like to think that same long-term view of their reinsurance relationships is part of that. So a lot of dynamics here. Is any of that changed? Do you think this new dynamic, is this the new normal, or is this just a short cycle we're in that's going to reset? So, Pat, what do you think about that?
Sure. I think the magnitude and velocity of change that we saw 4 or 5 months ago, I think we all agree, is pretty much unprecedented. We're hoping we don't see that again, right? So we hope there's certainly a transition to greater stability. I think some of the changes in program and structure are going to likely help drive that, right? There's going to be less surprise losses that are going to be ceded to programs. So I think that's good. Now, it's also going to be a challenge. Like, quarter one, 2023 was a very active CAT quarter, and most companies are carrying higher retentions now, right? Yeah. So there's going to be likely a greater difference in results amongst peer companies. A lot of the people in this room like to do peer benchmarks, and depending on where you tend to write in the country or where your footprint is, you're gonna see some of that. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, the reinsurers are extremely committed to building a product that is long-term and viable. I think dedicating time to go seeing your reinsurers in person when you can is extremely important. Any little thing you can do to differentiate yourself is important. And if Mother Nature cooperates, our anticipation would be hopefully greater supply in the market, like we're seeing in the ILS space over time, and then greater amount of stability going forward.
And Ridge, so GenRe kind of markets itself as, you know, the relationship company. I know everybody does, but I know that's part of your hallmark. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think just how we're structured. I mean, every GenRe person sitting in this room, with the exception of Kara, works exclusively with mutual insurance companies. And there is no debate in my mind that we look at mutual insurance companies differently than we look at large stock or E&S, or regional specialties, what we call them. I think that dedication, having relationships that are 85 and 90 years old, I think that still definitely matters to us as an organization. It's also been a segment that's performed well over the long term, so that's not a lost component of ours. I think the challenge for us is sometimes we're coming into conversations where we haven't played a role in the cap market, or we haven't played a role in certain parts of your program for a reason. We've always been a little bit high because we thought the market clearing price wasn't quite where we thought where it needed to be. Now we're being part of those conversations, so that's where I think we can be a good sound check for what you're seeing in the marketplace and the validation that we're seeing. Again, it's for us, it's a little bit more leading with claims, leading with underwriting is where we tend to focus our energy and time. So for us, it's a little bit more of a get under the hood, understand your portfolio and how it works. So I think that's kind of how we look at our programs. But to your point, Pat, you just said, I mean, you should be doing that with a lot of your markets, especially if they'll give you the time to go spend time with them.
Berto, what are your thoughts on this?
I think size matters, right? So. There's any number of clients or NAMIC companies here that buy over $500 million of cap limit, but the majority of them buy inside of $250 million and probably even inside of half of that. And so you don't have to accumulate as much capacity. And so therefore, your behaviors can be much more relationship-oriented, much more long-term-oriented. And so you have more choices in terms of markets. And so, you know, I'm sure we all have our sense of Bermuda markets versus continental European markets versus domestic markets and their behaviors. And we saw that manifest itself at 1-1. So without, you know, naming names, I think we all have a pretty good sense of who falls in that distribution. And certainly making sure that the propensity of the programs are placed with the more relationship-based reinsurers is good business for the NAMIC companies. And the reinsurers.
What about you? Go ahead, sorry.
No, and the reinsurers.
Yeah, I think relationships matter whether you're buying $10 million of reinsurance or $1 billion of reinsurance. I think what we saw at 1-1 were, you know, sorry, there's a fly over here.
Yeah, that, he's persistent, yeah.
I think he's visited with each of us as we're speaking.
I thought it was a vulture at first. But,
yeah. The shadow. I think relationships were, sorry, I lost my train of thought there. There was a lot, 3 years ago, frontline underwriters had full authority to authorize capacity, right? What took place is over the last 12 months, this was starting before we even got up to 1-1, was there's a lot of underwriting by committee. So the underwriter who you met with, we negotiated with, then had to take that packet of information and sell it to a committee within their company. So I think it was really important for us to make sure that we were helping to differentiate our clients. I think in some of those cases, the underwriters that still had the authority, the relationships mattered. If they've worked with you for 20 plus years, even if you just had a bad year, they've been partners with you for 20 years and they wanted to carry that relationship forward. I think particularly from the German reinsurers, we saw that. I think Lloyd's has been going through some restructuring of how they approach the business. And I think there was some disappointment amongst NAMIC members, rightly so, with some of the Lloyd's syndicates. I think in Bermuda and in the U.S. markets, again, there were underwriters that still had authority to make decisions on their own. And if they felt that they were comfortable with your portfolio, were willing to continue to, you know, trade based on that relationship. So I do think relationships matter. I think 1-1 was a blip, and I think we're going to go back to more of that, you know, relationship-oriented trade moving forward.
Pat, what about you?
Sure. Just one thing to add. I'm going to do a little tagline here that I heard a long time ago, which is the most expensive reinsurance is the reinsurance that doesn't pay. And so I think as we've navigated this market in each of our roles, right, and we're helping clients think about who they're partnering with and who they're doing business with. And in this room, I mean, there's a tremendous number of truly professional, best-in-class reinsurers in this room. And there's a propensity to go around and expand your marketing list to people you've never heard of and companies you've never met with. And we can certainly do that, but we spend a lot of time measuring credit quality and claim paying performance of these reinsurers because if you get put in a position that you're ceding an unexpected loss to somebody that you don't know terribly well and isn't terribly tested in the market, that can be an expensive proposition at the end of the day.
Yeah, we talked about this a bit in our pre-call for the panel. I've actually heard from one member, this is a new wrinkle for me, and that is a company asking if other members have been seeing any sort of slow payment or slow responsiveness from their reinsurer partners, as this company had been, and that was a kind of a new phenomenon. So I asked the group if they had heard anything, and so I don't know if anything new from that, but Pat, that's kind of building on your point there.
Sure. I mean, the one thing I might comment on that, I don't know if it's the case in this instance, right, but one of the areas that we've seen just capacity generally growing in the market is capacity for these legacy reinsurance transactions, with which both insurance companies are getting more and more involved in, as well as reinsurance companies get more and more involved in. And so sometimes claims paying issues when a reinsurer transfers reserves onto a third party can occur. So again, to me, it's not that legacy reinsurance transactions are bad. And in fact, they're a great capital solution for mutual insurance companies as well. But it's another item that you can talk to your reinsurance partners about and understanding their commitment to the business and what their long-term plans are for the risk that you're ultimately ceding for them. I don't know if that was the case, but that has been something that I've heard brought up.
Yeah. Scott, what do you think?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything along those lines. In fact, I think particularly in this space, we find that reinsurers are willing to, and in some cases, at least I know with us, it's even baked into the contract where if you know you're going to be having some large cash payments coming up, that they will pay in advance of you making that payment. So I'm sure there are occasions where there may be a disagreement or something falls through the cracks, but I'm not aware of any kind of trend where claims, where reinsurers aren't paying claims.
Yeah, that's good. Well, and it's this particular phenomenon, of course, occurred to me. This is the first sort of reinsurance renewal cycle that have been particularly challenging post the covered agreement and the changes in collateral requirements that we've had, that we used to be in place for foreign reinsurers, alien reinsurers. That name always cracked me up. But the, you know, we're living in that world now, and I didn't know if this was going to become something that we should really keep our eyes on. Berto, I don't know, anything you had to add on that at Ridge? Go ahead.
I think
a little bit different just being owned by Berkshire. I mean, our expectation to pay is 24 hours in a reasonable situation. One thing I would add to that is that getting your reinsurers involved in your claims process is something probably worth considering, especially as you think about a claim that's got real verticality. We've seen some real successes that have come of that, and we've seen some situations where companies probably didn't get reinsurance markets involved fast enough, because being that second set of eyes, giving you that chance to say, listen, let's settle this thing. There's no chance this is going to go well. Let's get out from underneath this thing. Or, hey, let's fight like dogs and see what happens. I think just because this is what we do every day and having the resource close by that you can pick up the phone and ask that question, that's a value that I think you need to be looking to your reinsurance markets to help you think through that.
Neil, I just wanted to add one thing, Pat, to your comment about reinsurance that doesn't pay. Early on, I mentioned some of the capacity that's flowing in on the cat bond side, and I was thinking about other products that are starting to come to market. I'm sure you've heard of parametric covers, and I think you just want to be careful that you go into any one of these transactions eyes wide open. Make sure you fully understand when it will and when it won't respond. I think for some of the publicly traded companies, they might look for opportunistic purchases to help manage quarterly volatility, whereas mutuals are more concerned about being able to turn on the lights when there is an event the next day. So I think you want to make sure that you're not looking for the cheapest solution that isn't going to respond in the event that you think it will. Particularly, again, when it comes to like a parametric. And I'm not saying they're not a solution, because in many cases, particularly where the weather trends have been, you know, for example, in the Midwest with an increase in SCS, parametric might be the right solution, since it's more, it's not indemnity-based. It's triggered on weather events. So I'm not suggesting that they're not always a solution, just to make sure you fully understand when it will and won't pay, so you're not explaining to a board member a purchase that you made that isn't going to respond.
And I would build off of what Scott said. I think this is a moment to kind of use a sports analogy. It's a gut check time for a lot of organizations, right? This is when blocking and tackling becomes incredibly important. And thinking about doing the things that make an insurance company run really, really well, I think is really important. You think about the amount of swirl that's in the marketplace as markets pull out. You know, that stuff might end up in your queue of things to take a look at. So making sure you have a really keen eye on the risk that you want to take and the risk that might change your portfolio as you take it on. I think this is when mutual and companies probably do their best work, is that if they can make sure they go back and understand what's made them around for 100 or 200 years and do that really, really well, I think this is when the market can really excel and really, really rise to it.
Great. So we have about 5 minutes to go. If audience members, if you have questions, I'm sure some of you do, go ahead and make your way to the microphone and we'll get your questions in here. If you have some, this is your chance. Don't hide behind. You can ask them anything you want. You sort of touched on it, Scott, which is what's new. So now let's get past July. Let's go next year. Any new creativity, new ideas? You know, cat bonds were a new thing a decade ago. Now they're not so much new. But what's coming?
I think we've touched on it between the ILS solutions, parametric covers. I think just getting more creative. Like we said, not to keep bringing up Everest, but they raised $1.5 billion, and investors want return on their investment. So they're going to be looking to deploy it. And as with supply and demand, as long as the supply is steady or increasing, and if demand stays flat, especially with inflation starting to trend down, that should bring down the market clearing price. Not suggesting that we're heading into a soft market, but at least a more stabilized market. Now, for the folks that know me, I'm always going to try and work the weather into anything that I present on. Looking ahead,
it took you this long.
looking ahead, it'll be really important to see how the hurricane season plays out, right? Because if we were to have a major catastrophe, or if there's something unexpected, and a couple reinsurers, you know, close up shop heading into 1-1, that could create challenges. We've already seen two named storms. I believe having two named in the month of June is pretty early. The bad news is the sea surface temperatures in the Gulf and up the entire East Coast are well above normal, which is, you know, fuel for storms. The good news is we have begun and we're further into the transition from La Nina to El Nino. And with El Nino, you get strong currents that go across Texas, Florida, and into the Atlantic. And that's why both Brett and, by the way, I'm not a meteorologist, so please, you know, you might want to verify this with your own internal sources. But with the wind shear that's over the Atlantic right now, they you know, shredded apart. So hopefully that continues through the rest of the season.
Berto, what do you think? Anything new, creative you see?
No, I'm actually, from a NAMIC company standpoint, I'm kind of a zero basis risk kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And so I would say contract clarity. I mean, in terms of, you know, again, size matters. If you're buying hundreds of millions of dollars of limit, then you might need to be creative in terms of how you get that capacity. But I would think that, you know, you talked about, you know, the worst reinsurance you have is the reinsurance that doesn't pay out. So anything you can do to mitigate basis risk. So I would, yeah, so from that standpoint, it's more traditional. I think the other thing, I don't know, popped up earlier in a conversation, but I think as best as people can tell, the Cat XL market was about a $30 to $35 billion market in the United States. That's been repriced to something closer to $45 billion. But a third of that is in Florida. So when you take Florida out of it, it shows how much prices increased in other places. And so maybe Everest is great with $1.5 billion, but the retained earnings absent big storms for cat reinsurers could be quite significant if they decide to deploy that capital.
Sure. Bridge, what do you think?
Yeah, I just think, thinking about your analytics, I mean, there's a lot of data information that you have within the walls of your organization. You have the ability to go out and get more, and trying to figure out what data you want to go collect to better understand or better inform the decisions that you're going to make and how you think about, say, for example, trend. Data point that I picked up yesterday was there's 6,100 independent hospitals in the country, of which half are not making any money. So that's a situation where they might start thinking about, we think about medical trend, medical inflation, they might start going to P&C carriers because we tend to have pretty relatively open wallets and we have spent a lot of money in those places. So those other data points are the things that I think as organizations you can start to think about. You know, go find people that you can bounce ideas off of. That's the one thing that I think is wonderful about NAMIC and the organization, the environment that you guys create. It's the ability to kind of have that collegial conversation about what are you tackling, what are you thinking about, what's the next move you're going to make, and I think that's going to make all the organizations within this group rise.
Pat, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would just add that I think a lot of the change and innovation that's happening is actually happening within the insurance organizations themselves. Yeah. So whether it's more robust and sophisticated rate making, all the way to some of that de-risking we talked about earlier, which, you know, by the way, is not easy for a regional carrier to do because a lot of times your peak driver of reinsurance is like your backyard with the insurance agent that you've done business with for three generations. But we're seeing a lot more need and a lot more demand for help and thinking about how to do that in a way that doesn't disrupt your organization, but perhaps makes you a little less reliant upon reinsurance if inflation does in fact continue.
Great. Well, as we're about out of time, I know we're between us and the golf outing. Any closing thoughts here? Berto, we started with you, we'll end with you. Any closing words of wisdom for the group?
Well, just much more optimistic about the coming renewal than we were for January 1 of last year.
Good.
For the cedents.
Scott, what about you?
Yeah, I would echo that. I think it's a much more optimistic view as we head towards 1-1. I think we're seeing that now. We saw it with the 4-1s. We're seeing it. We have 6-1s that we just wrapped up. We're in the market with our July 1s, and that seems to be the case.
Great.
Yeah, I think stability is what everybody's hoping for here over the next 6 or 7 months. We're seeing it right now. I think what last year demonstrated was probably not the fragility of the reinsurance market, but the sensitivity of it in terms of where it had gotten. And it seems like stability is set in now, and I think if we could predict the weather, we wouldn't be up here. But as long as, you know, absent something really big and unpredictable there, much more optimistic. Kind of like Dr. Hartwig. Like, I was like pumped after his. He's like,
Bob's always
things are good.
Yeah. I just hope he's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Rich, yeah, and you? I guess I'm a little contrarian here, is I think a little bit of healthy, being pessimistic a little bit. I think just challenging what you're seeing come through your doors, I think, is important right now. There's a tremendous amount of change we're seeing right now. And there's organizations around us that are making a lot of change. So making sure you're monitoring that flow of business that comes through your doors and really working with your key partners, I think, is really important.
Great. Well, thanks, panelists. We appreciate it.
And that's all for this week's episode of Insurance Uncovered. We'll be back again on August 23rd with more insurance news and perspective. Until then, I'm Kathy Imus. Have a terrific day.